Awesome. Let's get started, Chloe. Thanks a lot for joining us. It has been a fantastic week for us and for the car, right? We hope that a lot of people have come to know about car over the period, and we'll look forward to definitely do more activities. And this is one of them. So let's quickly get started. I would love to hear about more about you, and if you can please introduce yourself to our community, and then from there on we'll start with our questions.
Yeah, sure, sounds good. Thanks for inviting me, having me here, Nirbik. Super excited about our collaborations, and as you were mentioning, this is just one first step that we're collaborating together, and more exciting moments will be coming soon. And a little bit more about myself. I'm Chloe, one of the co-founder of CARF. So I actually joined the blockchain industry back in early 2018. Back then, I was co-founding a company called DLive.tv. What we do was pretty much the DLive, decentralized live streaming for gaming industry on the blockchain. And back then, with 2 years of operation, we were one of the biggest DApp in terms of traffic in the world. And then at end of 2019, we sold it to Chuang and also like BitTorrent. And after that, I joined one of the Chinese internet company, which was a giant internet company going overseas and acquired around 400 million users around the world. They also had a content department, and I was globally GMing, like general managing a couple of traditional content apps, including some gaming apps as well. And then in addition to that, was also operating a decentralized content economy called Contentos. And I believe that was the time back then I was meeting Nirbik in San Francisco, and we were launching a gaming hackathon with Binance Labs. And then we were getting some like exciting DApps about gaming back then. That was the very initial presence that we were seeing about the GameFi. But then later on, the industry developed a lot more. And then after working with Contentos, we actually achieved a lot of things. Let's say the tokens get listed onto the top-notch exchanges around the world, and then acquiring different landscapes or users around the world. Latin Americans or Southeast Asia was one of the biggest hubs for us. And then after 2 years there, last year we saw a lot of exciting moments in the industry, especially NFTs and GameFi. So I decided to start a new project to actually, as a gamer and trying to do something for the gamers. So hooked up with my team, like a couple of co-founders, and then we researched the gaming industry, and then given a lot of opportunities and pain points that we're seeing from the Web3 games, and we decided to make CARF, which is a gaming identity or credential protocol, helping the gamers to empower their achievements dashboard, and also like empowering their social experience, game discovery, as well as direct monetization, and then also providing the advertisement tools to the game studios. So hoping our products will be helping the gaming industry to boom a little bit more. Hello.
Awesome, thank you. That was a fantastic intro. Yeah. I clearly remember that we worked together for the San Francisco. It was, I think, a gaming hackathon, right? Series, which we did in India as well. And one was done in SF.
Yep.
Worries. Industry has evolved over the period, like since then. And and I think it has been like we have witnessed these changes, right? And during this period itself, we witnessed basically play to earn concepts like play to earn evolving, right? Which has taken industry to a level in altogether, which has changed how gaming ecosystems or economies work. So we'll discuss more about it. We'll quickly get into questions now and we'll you know, the first question would be if you can introduce your basically what GameFi is to the community who's listening.
Yeah, sure, Nirbik. It's on and off from my end, so wanted to repeat what you're asking to make sure that I understand the question. You were asking about what is GameFi, is that the question?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, exactly.
Happy to answer that. Yeah, so I think this probably will be helpful for a lot of folks here tonight, probably heard about GameFi, but probably didn't look into what exactly that is. So there is some explanation for that. As what we understanding from the broader perspective, GameFi is actually referring to play to earn blockchain games that offers the economic incentives to the players. So normally players can earn cryptocurrency and NFT rewards by completing some tasks or battling with other players or progressing through different game levels. So Xfinity Titan Arena from last year, or Xfinity was actually developed a couple of years ago, back in 2017, I believe. So those are the good representative for the GameFi or the GameFi projects, right? And a little bit more information is that unlike the traditional video games, most blockchain games let the players transfer the game items out of the game's virtual world. So it used to be a barrier, but nowadays, since the GameFi allowing or was empowered by NFTs or blockchain technologies, so players actually own their virtual assets, and then they can trade those items on the NFT markets or even on the secondary markets to make crypto earnings, and they essentially can cash out with the fiat currency. So I think this is a quick intro to the GameFi.
Awesome. Thank you, Chloe. That brings me to the second question, which is if you can explain the evolution of incentivization in gaming space, right? Since the moment, the games were exposed to crypto, and even before that, how games, gaming economies have evolved over the period.
I think this is a very interesting question. And from time to time, I've been pondering on that as well, right? So we've been through the education, we've been taught a lot of things like since when we were young. So a lot of Asian peoples, how they're having fun with each other. And I think gaming is actually a tactics, or it's an activity that a lot of people do to entertain themselves. And essentially it was different way for them to achieve different levels of the Maslow needs, right? So I think if we can throw back to the era that probably people who are here are remembering, is probably the era of gaming that's just like selling toys, right? We do remember when we were younger that the first time we're having a device like a Game Boy, or having a device like a PSP, that was the time that when we wanted to play with game, we have to buy a hardware actually first, and then with the hardware, or a lot more things that we can play with the cards by injecting into the hardware and play different games. So after that, there was the internet era coming into the everyday life for a lot of people. So for the game studios, probably the incentive for them to make that change is, or fitting the era, is that they can make the profit cycle a little bit longer by launching different content as the softwares to be sold to actually for the gamers. So normally a gamer with a PC or with an Xbox, they'll be able to buy some content from online, download to their own devices, and then play with that. And then next part, let's move to the social media era. Actually, besides the content of the gaming parts, there's more of the digital goods was sold in the games, right? So best probably example that I can think about was the Fortnite. So there are a lot of avatars or skins that you can buy. A lot of customizations can be engaged during those purchases. So that gives a lot of players the opportunity to show off their characters or characteristics in real life, and they can be actually living in a game very differently from what they are or who they are in the real life. So during that time, there was a new things that we can discover is people actually can be differentiated from them, different people by showing case their gaming assets, and it shows the rarity of who this gamer is, right? And then with the social economic context that we're transitioning to a little bit more onto the next era, which we're seeing right now, it's already more than one third of the population are the gamers, and also a lot more internet apps are transitioning to making the gaming one of the features in their social apps. For example, Snapchat's used to be a AR social platform. Now they can enable some mini games during their social. So we're expecting more and more people joining the gaming industry. So probably in 5 years or 10 years, that half of the population on the earth will be the gamers. So we're seeing at this stage, as more people are joining, gaming are not just fitting into some people who are with more free time and trying to show off themselves or trying to escape from the real life, or they want to create a second opportunity to living in the digital world differently, stuff like that. We also see people are actually combining the gaming in the real physical life, which means that actually people are making sense to having the GameFi coming to the world. More people playing the game for the needs of making some money that they can feed themselves in the real life. So we do see the GameFi coming to the places like in emerging markets, more people playing, and then as they play, that they can get some NFTs or cryptocurrencies from the game, and then trade it on the second market. Essentially, it will be the real money in the real life. And then we do see GameFi was having a very strong momentum last year because it's meeting a lot of people's needs. And then there was some data I also want to share here is that we know the game of Arena of Valor was one of the most popular game for the mobile game, at least. And then they probably normally have the retention of the active users at 2% every other month. And then for the GameFi projects like Axie Infinity, since a lot of people from Southeast Asia is very crazy about it, we heard about a story that a primary school boy that by playing Axie Infinity can earn more money than his father. So the retention actually for the Axie Infinity was like 40%, 20 times more than the Arena of Vela. So that creates some miracle from what we're seeing from the industry perspective. And we're thinking that this is just the incentives of the people or human needs actually getting a little bit more comprehensive when they're taking gaming into their daily life.
Awesome. No, I think you have thoroughly detailed, how it has evolved over the period. And the examples that you gave, certainly those were very important. So thanks a lot for that. And this one connects to the question that I've already asked. What are some of the most important parts while defining the economy around games?
Let me also understand this question. So you're asking about some relevant economies around the gaming industry, right?
Yes. So when you build games, you design economic system around it, right? So what are some of the most important parts when you define that?
Oh, yeah, sure. So normally for the traditional game, I can start with this part and then moving into how the GameFi today is a little bit different from the traditional game studios, how they're operating the economies or the entire thing surrounding the gaming industry. So normally in the traditional world that we know, as I was mentioning about the early days when we remember playing games, that we need to buy some hardwares, and then moving to the industry of internet comes with the softwares. So normally the hardwares, softwares are the important parts of the game industry. And then the game studios, of course, they're the most important one of the most important ones, because without them, that there's no games for us to play with. And then game studios normally will be more focusing on the gameplay. Other than that, there will be the publishers who will be financially supporting as well as supporting on the business side, which is the marketing side of the things for the game studios. When they have the games ready, they will be helping on how the games making the noise, releasing to the markets. And there will be the distributors. Sometimes they are the platforms like Steam or GOG or Epic Games like that. Helping the games to make a little bit more exposure because they already have the user base. And then after that, when the game is going more popular, there will be events organizers, or sometimes it's online, sometimes it's offline. Just think about esports tournaments. There's also content-related platforms because gaming is very entertaining. A lot of people wanted to find friends, do social, and also want to find another self in the gaming or digital world. Then there are certain ways people will experience themselves. But there's also some people that they probably don't have the time to play, or they don't have the skill sets to play very well. So there are certain content platforms that they can join for discussion, for asking questions, or just by watching other people play. So like the live streaming platforms or video content platforms. And then there's also merch providers, because gamers are crazy fans that they like the clans or they like such games, they will be buying a lot of things from the merch providers. And at the very end, there are the users who are supporting, spending money actually to supporting the gaming industry, sustaining the whole supply chain to make it work. So this is the traditional gaming economy. And what we're seeing as the GameFi is a little bit like a different or differentiated from the traditional one in terms of the financial or structural level, right? So financially, there's a lot of ways. We see the GameFi projects, a lot of them that they were trying to sell their NFTs with a big vision about what kind of games that they wanted to work on. So that skipped the process that the game studios need some funds or from some institutions to make the game first. They actually give them more flexibility for the community to take participation into the process. So a lot of users nowadays can own part of the game. That's what we call it, right? By owning the tokens or stuff like that, or the NFTs of the in-game assets. So they can do that, support the games by actions like that. So that when the games having the enough capital to work on the gameplays, work on the technology, and essentially release the game, people can benefit from that. And then also the other way is about skipping the middleman, because in the Web3 world, that a lot of things that people are trying to fight for as their rights is that they don't want the middleman to play a role as a monopoly, right? So for now, the distributors or publisher role is not a monopoly guy, probably very different from the Web2 world. So the games has a lot of flexibility to approach their community and have a lot of tools that they can offer their publishing or the gaming launch to approach to their users. So I think these are a couple of core features that we're seeing the economy are changing surrounding the gaming industry or vertical, comparing the traditional gamings as well as the new type of play to earn or GameFi gamings.
Awesome. Thank you. That was fantastic. So that brings me to the next question that we have is, how do GameFi protocols operate, and I'll break it into two parts. So first is, how do GameFi protocols operate, and second is, what are some of the benefits that GameFi offers above the usual gaming experience, like where there's no finance, like it's more of like a earn to playing kind of model, right? Not play to earn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If you can break that into how does these protocols work, the GameFi protocols, mm-hmm. and what are the some benefits about the usual gaming experience?
Mm-hmm. I think this is a great question. So if we actually look into the word of GameFi, right? Pretty much it is game plus fi. That fi can be like decentralized finance or just finance simply. So from that understanding, what we see is separating into two parts. One part is about the game design, gameplay, the whole gaming thing, right? I don't think that changed much actually on how you are building a game, or how, especially how you try to build a good game, right? The five parts are the core things that we want to discuss today. So normally the GameFi protocols, how they're operating, in my opinion, there are three things that's very core to take into consideration, three to four things actually. So one part is about some assets that used to be the consumptions for the players, or they're thinking, I'm buying this game, or I'm buying this lens. But as long as if the game studios were going to like a bankruptcy, or the company got banned in this country, then I probably will no longer have my consumption of this game or lens anymore. But nowadays, since the GameFi has one of the features very important or empowering the user is to making their in-game assets more on the side of NFTs. That means the players who are spending money to buy the NFTs are actually owning this piece of NFTs. Can be a lens, can be an avatar, can be anything in the game, but as their personal assets. Even if, let's say, the game actually go bankruptcy, or this game actually collapse, that no one is playing that anymore, then probably your NFT goes more expensive, or it's worth more money because it's very limited edition, right? So just think about like the NFT parts of the in-game assets or in-game creators are transferring to the NFT infrastructure. So that is just conforming to the standards of ERC 721 or ERC 1155, there's more forms or standards are coming out, but essentially they are a non-fungible token that's pretty much signifying your assets. So the second part I want to mention is about the cryptocurrency or the tokenomics. That pretty much was designing for the in-game token or currency. This is not super unfamiliar with the gamers from a long time ago. Because when we were remembering during the days that we were playing the World of Warcraft, we actually still, like gamers, we go to some place and then trying to mine some very rare resources from the game. And then what we do will be actually listing this resource into another secondary markets as a third party outside the game, and then trying to trade it for some money, right? It can be the local currency. So it's just a similar idea like the play to earn. But nowadays, because the in-game currency changed it to cryptocurrency, which you can just think about the better liquidity of your assets or the in-game currency, you can cash in more easily, as well as cash out into different fiat currency more easily, because majority of the token will be able to cash out to Ethereum or Bitcoin or any other major coins, or even just USDT or the fiat currency. So you can think about as signifying a little bit more onto the liquidity side. And then the other thing actually wanted to mention about the GameFi protocol is, as I was mentioning, the structural wise of the things making the ownership a little bit different. So used to be the game studio own and the investors own majority of the shares or the returns, essentially, for the gaming success, right? But nowadays, since the community are taking a lot of participation in this, at the very initial stage, people are going there to support the games. So actually, those people will be one of the shareholders and essentially be the beneficiaries when the game success comes as well. They can be contributing and also getting the returns from that. So I think, as I was mentioning, NFTs, cryptocurrencies, as well as the ownership are the very important things. And on top of that, because it's signifying a little bit more onto the personal asset side, cryptocurrency as the liquidity side. So there's also some protocols are actually will be helping on the legal side to make sure that everything here will be also conforming to the rules or regulations of like anti-money laundering and things like that. So I think normally the GameFi protocols operates on four angles or aspects to make sure the GameFi projects are legit and can supporting the users to have more benefits from that. Yeah, so I think this was the first question Nurbik asked, and that's my answer to that. And then there's also other questions Nurbik was asking about the benefits that GameFi offers. Yep. In addition to the usual gaming experience, right? I think I touched a little bit onto this as well. So the NFT signifying more on the user's ownership on the assets and more liquidity, easy to cash in and cash out. Ownership of the game, people can also get returns even when the game success, when you're trying to contribute early. And then I think what other things is more about the benefits to not just the users on the game studio side. So they actually can have a alternative to fundraise at their earlier stage. They don't need to show make all the MVPs and then show the investors, get the money, and then launch the game. They can get the trust from the community, work with the community, work with a lot of people, and try to launch the try to get the money and then supports, and then try to start make the games. And essentially, it also has a more exaggerated magnifying effects on the secondary market as well. So I'm thinking it's also a very strong incentives were offered to the game studio side.
Awesome. Thank you. I think that was the best answer I probably would have heard. And the example that you mentioned, right, about the Warcraft, right?
World of Warcraft.
Yeah, World of Warcraft. That was a good example. Thank you for that. So that brings me to the next question, which is, why do you think the need of GameFi came into existence, or what could be the significance? How did it, turn into a play-to-earn model, and how all things have shaped up right now?
Mm-hmm. I think to answer this question, also wanted to look into two angles. One part is about why game studios or investors who are as the pusher to make GameFi into existence. And on the other side is the gamers who are like the receiver, but nowadays it's also they're also part of the pusher on the GameFi side. they both parties actually have the incentive to make GameFi come to existence. So I'll start with the games parts first. So as what I was mentioning about the financial parts, that's one of the strong incentives for the games to make that change. And then especially before, if the games wanted to receive some money or transactions payments from the gamers, normally those are what we call like microtransactions. But nowadays, if the user are thinking, oh, I'm not just spending money on some like instant happiness, right? Buy some like a little skins I probably will not use, or I will forget about it in 2 years, but it's my assets. Then users who are willing to spend $100 nowadays probably willing to spend like $2,000 or $2,000, right? So those are the instant money the game studios can receive. And then I also mentioned about on the secondary markets that if you have 1 million of users on the traditional, as a traditional gaming, you probably will have the revenue to take into consideration and then think about what's the PE ratio and then project into what's the potential market cap that you can get from the secondary market. But nowadays, because the token liquidity and speculations on secondary market, 1 million of the users probably can grant you way bigger of the speculators on speculations on the secondary markets and liquidity. So for the investors and game studios, they actually have the incentive to make that move. And on the receiver side, which is more on the gamer side, probably two things are important for them. One part is about the liquidity. So the NFT assets to be traded, cryptocurrency to cash in and cash out. It used to happen a lot, as I was mentioning, the World of Warcraft. It's always be a pain in the ass, right? Gamers have to try to trust a third party for the trading. Sometimes they lose all what they work on from the games. So that's a big risk. But nowadays, because the games also have the marketplace actually within their own game, so users easier to have the access. But meanwhile, also every time there was a transaction, game studios also can get a percentage or a revenue split or platform fee actually from those transactions too. But it's also providing the better liquidity for the gamers, so they would like it. And the other thing is about the gamers will be easier to transverse across different games. So the GameFi, something very interesting is that once you play something with one like a wallet address, that will be on the blockchain registered there forever, right? So let's say if I played a Mobox game, I loved it, and then I purchased so many NFTs from there. I hold it for a long time. I played every day, 5 hours a day, and lasting for like more than 6 months. So all those history actually will be registered on chain. And then with the same wallet address, if I go to another game, then there will be I will be able to be recognized by the game. Oh, this is my history. Unlike the Web2 world, when different games you're trying to play, you're always a newbie into each new games. So we're thinking about the GameFi industry, probably for the gamer side, they would care about liquidity and then also the interoperability. So those are the needs that the gamers want to have. And with especially the NFTs, gamers will be able to showcase about themselves, to showing their belongings, self-esteem, showing who they are, customization, stuff like that. And then also play to earn are helping a lot of people's life in the emerging markets. So that's the very basic physical need as well. Combining all these, we're thinking those are the strong momentum that's pushing the game by coming into existence.
Perfect. Thank you for that answer. So that brings me to the next question, which is our sixth question, and it is now about Carve, right? So how is Carve contributing to this ever-evolving gaming space in Web3?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think thanks for asking this question. I think what Carve is playing a role Carve was born, was given the context that we were seeing a lot of Web3 games did their first try, especially they were very booming last year. But we were seeing a lot of people, doing some evil. For example, things I was mentioning with one wallet address, which is very easy and simple, low cost to get one wallet address. And then if you can leverage that wallet address without giving the real identity of your real world, probably you can do a little bit more on the bad behaviors. For example, I know someone that from last year, I saw him knowing nothing about blockchain before, but he's an engineer. So he actually wrote a lot of script to running some bots and playing those play-to-earn games, right? So Axie Infinity and those are great games. But then because a lot of people see a play-to-earn opportunity, so they actually were trying to cheat in the system by writing the bots, writing the script to work on that. So they don't know too much, but they know this will grant them some earning opportunities. So they put a lot of money, like a couple of millions of US dollars, put into one game. So what that brings to them is actually, in a very short period of time, they get a lot of money that's quote unquote earned from the game by playing by those bots that ruined a lot of real experience for the real users. So every time the real user play, they will have no way to win a bot user because the bot user always click better, think better, or make a decisions in a better context than a real player. And also, if the real player cannot earn, cannot win a game, then they will be losing the confidence in the game by quitting the game. So that was part about like gamers was so easy to make something evil in the Web3 games. And the other part is about we're thinking about the problem in the other side. So when a lot of games, if they can choose which gamers to get into or granted into their initial gaming launch, right? So if they choose the gamers really are falling into their category of games, for example, someone was a big fan of first-person shooting. I want to attract those users into my game. Someone likes the strategy games. If I attract those people in the game, so probably they wouldn't be so into the idea of, okay, I need to make the money today and then get rid of the game the very next day, right? They care about, this is a game I like. I have my friends there. Every weekend, I can play with a couple of like folks and then from different world, and we can chat about games as well as life. So if they think about it that way, then probably they wouldn't be chasing so much about just the profits, not the gaming experience. So we're thinking about if the games, when they were choosing the initial or onboarding the initial users, with the context about who this user is, just like a little bit more like the Web2 world, then probably they can be making the gaming lifespan more sustainable or longer. That goes to the things that we were designing, which is the CAR protocol. It's pretty much a gaming credential system or a protocol, a data engine that's helping the gamers to put together about their gaming identity across the chains, across games, across wallets, putting them into one place. So for the game studios, if they wanted to launch a campaign to acquire new users, that they can query the data on our protocol. And on the user interface on the product side, pretty much it's a campaign saying, hey, if you do this or if you qualify these requirements, then you will be able to be gifted into a early access to our game, stuff like that. Then for the gamers, if they can showcase that they already played certain games for how many hours and they're qualified for the requirements that's set by the game, that they will be allowed to the games. So if they can get initial user base like that, probably in the longer term, it's more healthy for the gaming's life cycle as well as the entire community vibes. So that's something that we're building. But also for the gamer side, when they were having a gaming identity for the Web3 world, we're talking about something about democratize your data ownership, right? So it's not going to be always the big internet companies owning your data, and then they're selling your data to the advertisers. Essentially, you get nothing, but then the companies become multi-billion dollar companies, right? So we're doing some like revolution on this one. So we also, CAR protocol was helping the users to gather all their scattered or siloed data, as I was mentioning, from different chains, from different wallets, and put them together, helping the users to interpret the data. That they can self-understand. So they can use their data, use their gaming identity to help themselves to make new friends, got recommended by new games that they potentially will be interested in, and then also to actually get the opportunities to monetize from their data directly by interacting with the game studio, skipping the middleman, skipping the big internet companies. So that's the CARF protocol about what the CARF protocol is about, and then how we're thinking to helping the game studio side to find the right users as well as helping the gamer side to enhance their experience by having all their gaming moments in one place, because normally gamers play a lot of games in their gaming life, and then also leveraging the gaming data to help themselves better social and also better monetize.
That sounds great. Perfect. Awesome. So that brings me to one other question. I think you have answered part of it, but I'll still ask this question. So what are some of the key benefits? Because it's all about community, right? And we have people listening over here and they would like to try out Carve, right? So what are some of the key benefits for the community, you know, using Carve?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think a couple of aspects here, I didn't go too deeper in the previous question, a little bit overlapping, so wanted to also point that out. So first part, definitely we're helping all the gamers who had the gaming experience, not just in Web3 games, but also in Web2 games, as long as you played from different platforms, downloaded from app stores or Steam or even just the APK from Web2 world, we'll be able to help you to put all the data together into one place so that you actually have one place to trace. This is what I played, how many hours in this, how many hours in that, what kind of achievements I made in this one, being proud of yourself. And also you can make that into the NFT badges, which will be forever on chain. And then you can bring that to different social medias to show off who you are as a gamer. So that's more about showing off yourself or understanding yourself very well. But that also is a dashboard place that you can see a lot of transactions on the NFTs or the cryptocurrency side. So it's a place for you to review your decision makings in terms of doing the investment, stuff like that as well. So that's the dashboard part. And then the other part is about with the data, you can actually participate in a lot of access to the new games, supporting their launch, whitelist to IDOs, IEOs, and then also the whitelist to the discounted price of IGO, initial game offerings on our platform, because we already have a native marketplace that's embedded in the platform. So as long as you can get those whitelists, it's pretty much that you can resell it next time for a higher price or stuff like that, just lower than the market average. But that's more important is the gaming studio probably wanted to achieve or recruit the users like you to help them to build the games. So that's just one part about the direct monetization. And the other part is about we're building a gamers community. So if you're a diehard gamer in your heart, that this is a community that people actually will be reviewing on the games, helping each other to discover new interesting games or high return games together. And people will not just be commenting or discovering or saying the games, the shitty talk about some games or stuff like that, because they do have their credentials to be registered on their identity. So if something evil that they're doing or stuff like that, that probably will be hurting their reputation system, things like that. So there is a positive reinforcement that we're trying to create and then trying to make the gaming discovery as well as the a making friends environment will be better for the gamers. That's also some places that or some angles that we can work with the DappList, because DappList is already designing a mechanism that helping on the Dapp hunters as well as the voting parts. So we can see if there's more synergies that we can actually work in something on the gaming side to make it more beneficial for the DappList community as well as the Carve community.
Definitely, that sounds fantastic, Chloe. And I think perfectly that would definitely align, right? And we'll definitely discuss more on those parts. Although although that was the last question, but still, I've got one more question for you. Is that we have so many projects now building, guilds and the DAOs around gaming and things like that, which is basically based on Play2Earn. How do you think this will evolve into, and where do you see they are right now, and where do you think they would be in six months or 1 year timeline?
Let me clarify your question. You're asking about many play-to-earn DAO
guilds.
Projects.
Where
do we see that into? That's a good question. That's also, I think the topics were, the future, quote unquote, even it's just in 6 months, right? But we're trying to make some predictions. So what we see as a trend, that's especially for the Web3 games that's launched last year, probably 1,000 games was launched, and now there's only a couple or 10s or 20s of the games are still surviving, right? Under markets when the bubbles are squeezed out. So what we see is that those leading pioneer Web3 games or play-to-earn games, GameFi projects, what they do is actually they were trying to lower the barrier for incorporating more people into their funnels. For example, Axie Infinity used to sell their XE babies, actually like the three XE babies you all need to be capable of, and then start playing the game. So probably cost around $6, $1,000 or stuff like that. But nowadays they already launched the free to play version. And then with that, they were also trying to incorporate, which is not available yet, but probably in a couple of months that they will be launching a ad system and also the microtransaction kind of like a mechanism into the game. So what we see is that those Web3 games are also embracing a little bit more onto the Web2 kind of like a gaming business model, just like what people normally do, do some microtransaction kind of consumption on their mobile games. So those are the things that we're seeing from there. And the other parts about like a Titan Arena probably is a good example, because we worked with them as a good, very close partner. What they're trying to do is that they used to sell NFTs to attract the Web3 dwellers, what we call them, or the Web3 natives, blockchain native, crypto natives first. And then nowadays, since the markets was so fluctuated based on their tokenomics, what they do it was actually, because it's a very well-made game, so they are actually launching their esports tournament to make more exposures in different markets. But what they trying to recruit from those esports tournament was to recruit the real mobile gaming players or the mobile gamers, right? So we're seeing that they were trying to target those more mainstream gamers in the world, and trying to make the presence in the Web2 world as well. In the meanwhile, Web3 games are actually working their ass off to trying to launch some version incorporating the NFTs, incorporating the cryptocurrencies, and trying to make more benefits to their communities, and then also the gamers, making there be more collaborative on their game side, not just like I'm a game studio trying to sell my game to you, or I want you to be addicted to the game and then pay money in the game, right? So they're also like, oh, if you have talents, this is the community, you can submit your arts, and probably I can make it into skin as an NFT assets, and then sell it in the whole games. And when people are buying that, the revenue stream will be also going parts to you, because blockchain will enable the provenance, and it will be very helpful for tracing who was the owner, who was the creator for that. So we're seeing a very probably a balance point, or a point that from Web3 world and Web2 world, they were trying to reach to some agreement in the probably next 6 months to a year. So that's what we're very excited about and looking forward to that. Especially upon that point to be reached, a lot more of the games that's of great quality developed by the top-notch studios in the world. So I'll be bringing the interoperability, liquidity, as well as the fun of the gaming side all together. So we're super long for this gaming industry in the longer term, and hoping we can play a very important role to make that happen as well.
Awesome. Thank you. So I'll probably ask one last one. What is the any new update or any alpha for the community who's listening over here right now from the car?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. I think right now we actually just launched our open alpha testing. So we're welcoming all the Web3 crypto natives as well as the Web2 world gamers join us to do the testing. There's a lot of badges NFTs that we're giving out. And some very interesting thing is that you're just like collecting unlocking different achievements by collecting those badges. Essentially, when you get enough resource, which we put it like a 4 badges, you can burn those 4 badges and make it 1 mega badge. And that mega badge was actually a great credential to show that you're helping the Carve to test out. It's the first alpha version, as well as the credential will be gating the airdrop token of ARK, which was the native token for Carve. And this is the very initial events, but grand that we're trying to launch. So I think this is something that looking forward to for the community members. And there's other things that we're actually launching a little bit like preview onto the context is next month we'll be incorporating 4 games, which are the top-notch Web3 games nowadays. We're not gonna disclose the names today, but please keep an eye onto our social medias, and that will be announced accordingly there. Those 4 games will be also launching a lot of perks or direct monetization and also benefits to the users who used to play those games. And then they will be also updating their data pipeline with our like open API. So pretty much when there's updates or new achievements they made in the game by playing, you will be able to come to Carve actually to unlock a badge. And essentially that will be gaining more perks from other games as well. So this is also very exciting. And then we're working with the multiple chains. For example, Polygon, Solana, Avalanche Phantom, BNB chain, and also like Near chain. They're all the big supporters of us. So they're pulling a lot of games from those chains. So if any of the game that you guys are interested in, there will be enable a lot of more opportunity for you to get into the early access to the games to do during their testing, and then also early access to their like NFT launch, stuff like that. So I think those probably are the exciting moments for our communities can look in forward to.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks a lot for that, Chloe. Now we